Hey everyone, it's Jeff Salzenstein, and I've got an awesome interview today. We've got a former ATP professional player that we're going to be talking to, all about the two-handed backhand. And we've got Brian Vahaly on the line. Brian, welcome to the call today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's awesome to reconnect with you again. I know it's been a couple of years, and you've moved out of the tennis world, but some of the big-time tennis fans out there know that you had a wonderful career, not only in the juniors and then going on to University of Virginia, but you were a top 100 ATP player. You played 6 years on the tour, originally from Atlanta, Georgia. Just some great stuff that you did with your tennis before you moved on. Why don't you talk a little bit about your experiences as a junior, college, pro, just maybe some of the highlights of those aspects of your tennis career before we get into the two-handed backhand.
Sure. So I started at a pretty young age. My folks put a racket in my hand when I was 3 years old and you know, really started playing just recreational local tournaments probably till I was seven or eight. And I think as I started to find success, my parents gave me the opportunity to go play at a state and sectional level. And I came from a pretty good state at Georgia and had a lot of players, Robbie Ginepri and Bobby Reynolds, two guys that have also been in the top 100 ATP rankings. So, you know, I think with good competition brought great success for a lot of us, was able to be ranked, you know, number one in the country by the time I was 18 years old, who actually was James Blake, and had a couple other great players that I came alongside. But finished out my junior career, decided to go ahead and play college tennis, signed at the University of Virginia, where I felt like it gave me an opportunity to play higher up in the lineup, you know, early on, and received Rookie of the Year and Player of the Year from the ACC there. I was an All-American for three of my years. Got up to as high as number two in singles. And from there, it just sort of felt like kind of the natural transition to try it out professionally. And not a lot of, you know, there weren't many professionals out there with a college degree. And I had stayed all 4 years at Virginia. So I knew it was going to be a difficult path. But, you know, spent some time in the futures for the first 6-7 months. Trying to build your ranking up, you know, starting at 1500 all the way to, you know, it's 600, 300, trying to make the slow climb, inevitably playing up on the ATP tour by my second year, playing against guys like Agassi and Roddick and, playing all the grand slams, you know, sort of living the childhood dream until unfortunately rotator cuff surgery, took me out in, 2007. I had to go through a bunch of surgeries and that was the end of it, but got a great opportunity to travel, you know, to many different countries, seeing the world, you know, and playing the best players in the world.
Yeah, you really, you did a remarkable job with your career. I'm sure a lot of people at different stages would have never guessed that you would have gotten to, you know, top 60 in the world, but obviously you didn't count yourself out and neither did your family or your coaches. So it's a tribute to what you created. And, you know, as one of your peers, you know, I always admired your work ethic and your professionalism and all the great things you did with your career. So congratulations for all of that, really.
No, thanks. It was a long, tough climb, but certainly well worth it and a lot of fun.
Yeah, before we get into the two-hander, there were some things that I was thinking about as you were talking, and one thing that I was really curious about is, you know, what you think was – you mentioned James Blake in the juniors, and there were other great junior players that you were competing against. You know, what do you think separated you at that time to get to number one, to be the number one player in the country at 18? Was it a combination of things? Was it having a great coach? Was it your drive? Was it your smarts? Was it your foundation, your fundamentals? What do you think made it so that you were number one instead of maybe 10 or 20 in the country? What was the difference at the junior level for you?
Yeah, juniors for me, you know, so much of it is about mental toughness. I mean, I felt like I learned what I needed to at each stage of my, you know, career. I was actually 5 feet tall all the way until I was 16 years old. So I had to learn how to win, you know, not with strength, not with power, but with mental toughness as well as strategy. So, you know, one of my coaches that I had throughout my career, Jerry Baskin, really worked hard with me as it related to having always coming onto the court, being very deliberate, focusing on strategy and not worrying so much about the results that the results would take care of themselves. So for me, he took a very long-term approach to my game. I learned what I needed to do to win in the 12s, the 14s, the 16 and unders, and eventually, you know, up and through to the 18s. But, you know, truly at that time, especially when guys aren't as developed as they become on the professional tour, you know, it's about tenacity. It's about strategy. And, you know, everybody can hit the ball. Everybody can hit the ball well. The question is who makes the right decisions on where to hit the ball at the appropriate times and how to, you know, defeat and mentally unwind an opponent. And one of the things I felt I was very strong at was, you know, I didn't give anybody an inch, and I wasn't willing to provide a mental weakness on the court that would give people, you know, an angle or an attack on me. So, you know, for me, it was tough. There was certainly very little things that separate the top, but I also recognize that even at the ATP level, you know, there's very small differences. I just felt as though my shot selection and mental toughness were what sort of pushed me over the edge, along with really hard work off the court. You know, I sort of refused to ever get tired at any point in the match. And I think certainly starting when I was about 13 or 14 years old, my physical fitness was, I think, far superior than to most of my peers out there playing.
Oh, that's awesome stuff to share with everyone. And then you go on to Virginia, and not exactly a tennis powerhouse like it is now. You've got to be totally psyched at how well they're doing with their program right now. But why did you go to Virginia as being the number one player in the country? You could have probably gone to many other schools that were ranked higher. Why was that a good fit for you at the time?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been one to take the road most traveled, I guess. So I wasn't concerned about it. For me, it was really about finding the right fit. I think, you know, when I went to some of the other universities where they had tons of top players and you sort of become one amongst many, it wasn't the right fit for me. For many players, they need that constant push amongst their teammates. I did not. I wanted to be able to go in and I wanted to lead. And I wanted to lead right from the beginning and start something and build something. And that's actually, interestingly enough, an attitude that I have even in the professional world now outside of tennis. But I wanted to play the best guys right away. If I was going to go to college and not turn pro as some of my other, you know, peers were doing in you know, the junior world rankings, I wanted to play the top right off the bat and see what I needed to do to improve. Because to me, there's no other better way to learn than, you know, oftentimes take defeats and learn from players that are better than you. And that was sort of my first opportunity to play guys 3 and 4 years older. And to be honest, I just loved the school. The second I was there, the thought it was destined to be a great tennis collegiate atmosphere, and I felt like I was the guy that could start putting it on that path.
Awesome stuff. So let's move into the backhand. You had an awesome backhand, one of the top backhands in the world at the time that you played. I always disliked playing you because I knew that my forehand, which was my strength, my lefty forehand was going to hook into your strength, and I knew my wide slice was going to hook into your strength on the return, so you were a nightmare for me to play. Now at least I get to figure out a couple of the secrets. What was your secret growing up? Did you always have a great backhand? Was it natural? Was it something that you and Jerry just worked on relentlessly? Tell me about the evolution of your backhand as a junior player moving on into the college and even into the pros.
Sure. So at an early age, again, Jerry Baskin taught me that the typical strategy out there is you see a lot of people playing to their opponent's backhand. That's where the weakness is. And my strategy was going to be to have one of the best backhands, you know, in the country, if the world, you know, whatever it needed to be, because typically most people don't like to play to the forehand. They continually go cross court to the backhand. That's sort of found a comfort zone. So, you know, I spent a lot of time early on figuring out the backhand, learning how the weight distribution, learning how, you know, doing work with medicine balls to figure out how to move use my legs, use my hips, use my shoulders to generate pace. I worked very hard on, you know, making my contact point very far out in front. The further out in front it was, the less work I had to do. That was, for me, helping me to optimize the pace that was going to come off my racket. I worked very hard with Jerry on keeping my grip, specifically my left hand, because I'm a right-handed player. I wanted my left hand as low on the grip as possible because, for me, this was going to be a left-handed forehand. So just as strong as a forehand could be on, you know, my right-handed side, I felt like my backhand could be very strong as a left-handed forehand, but with a little bit of, you know, obvious support on my right hand underneath it. So I lowered my hands on my grip very low, and I felt like as long as I focused on those three things, more specifically the contact point, if it was in front of me, and hence not letting the ball play me, it was something that I always felt very aggressive on. I felt like I could drive players back and, you know, keep the rally to a backhand-to-backhand matchup where, you know, if they did come to my forehand, I was certainly strong enough to be able to hurt them and move them. But knowing that players typically play to the backhand side, I wanted to have one of the best ones.
Yeah, well, it sounds like an awesome philosophy. It worked for you very well. I actually want to get into a nuance about your backhand that probably, well, I don't know if anyone does this in the world. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but my memory serves me correct. You have an interlaced grip with both your hands, almost as if you were a golfer holding a golf club. Is that true? You interlace with
It
your
is true.
thumb?
It is true. I don't even know if I would recommend it. But again,
Yeah.
what I started to realize was wrist snap and catch and contact point were everything. Not only for power, I could generate more power than any player out there, but I could also keep a solid amount of control. But again, so much of that was, as I mentioned, keeping my left hand as low as possible. So I started to realize if I could cheat a little bit, and overlap my grip when possible, sometimes interlock it. The lower I could get that left hand, the more, pop I could get on that left wrist. And it was very unconventional. I struggled with it for a little while because sometimes my hands would slip, my fingers being sweaty out on the court, they'd slip off each other. So I started taping my fingers. But, the lower my left hand got, the more powerful and more consistent, my backhand became. And so I developed, I don't know any player that has ever played that had it. I'm not even sure. My coach certainly didn't teach it to me. I think it was just me intuitively knowing the lower, as a player, you're constantly making quick decisions and adapting. And, especially as I had mentioned, I was 5 feet tall until I was 16 years old. I needed the power. So, if I couldn't get it from a regular backhand, my body sort of figured out ways intuitively to get that extra little bit of strength, and it turned out to be an overlapping, interlocking golf grip.
Yeah, it's amazing. I wondered if Jerry had shown you that trick or if that was just one of your deals. And I'm glad we got to the bottom of it because I've never seen anything like it, but it certainly works for you. So I'm envisioning you down in Atlanta, Georgia, growing up as a junior, just hitting thousands and thousands of backhands, not only with Jerry, but hitting back and forth. And then you probably continued that same type of drilling with Jerry and the pros. I know that I worked with Jerry as well, and he's famous for getting that basket out, whether you're in a backcourt in Chattanooga or you're on center court at the U.S. Open. Is that something that really helped you continue to develop your backhand and your baseline game because you just constantly got the reps in while you were on the tour as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I was told sort of early on, if you really want to be successful at something, you're going to have to put in about 10,000 hours. And I always felt like time on the court was very, very important. Jerry felt very strongly in muscle memory, and especially in times of high anxiety. And that certainly picked up even more when you're playing on larger stadiums in front of, thousands of people. Even if you're playing on some of the backcourts for a lot of money, there's a tremendous amount of stress and pressure out there. And for him, if we could focus on the strategy in advance, but at the same time, keep your muscle memory strong. So in moments of crisis, you can really let your mind relax and just trust your body's natural rhythm. That was something that really gave me a lot of peace of mind when I was out there, to not try and create something, not try and do anything special in the big moments. Just trust your muscle memory. So Jerry was very big, if any times there was issues with confidence, any times of a big match coming up, always focus back on the fundamentals.
Yeah, awesome. So playing on the tour, you obviously saw a lot of great backhands. Give me maybe your top three backhands that you played against and why in your generation or our generation. And then if you even follow the game now, who are some of the guys you like to watch and marvel at that are playing right now with the great two-handers?
Certainly the best backhand I ever played against was Agassi. That was, for me, the first time I played against somebody on a backhand-to-backhand rally, but just when I stepped up and ripped the ball, he could rip it back even harder. And I was not used to that. To me, the backhand rally was one for me to always win. So I will certainly never forget the kind of pace he took the cross-court ball, whether on the forehand side or backhand side, and in my opinion, did it better than anybody. So I will never. I got the opportunity to play Andre twice, but I will never forget that feeling of hitting some of my best stuff and it just coming back even harder, where I'm the one on my back foot and I'm the one scrambling. So he sticks out by a mile. A lot. There's certainly some. There were certainly always the pretty backhands that were out there. Gasquet, got a chance to play him once, and
But he has a one-hander. We're talking two-handers today.
We're talking two-handers.
We're talking two-handers, the best two-handers. So Agassi by far and away. Anybody else
who
stands out?
He stuck out for me. You know, a lot of the other, you know, you had guys like
What about Vinny Espadia?
Espadia was certainly, right, was the next one I was thinking of, somebody who was very consistent and wasn't afraid to, you know, occasionally pull the trigger, and I thought that was always very – he was a little bit more deceptive with his. You know, he wasn't afraid to just keep the ball going and then all of a sudden catch you off guard, which I liked, that sort of a different play than Agassi. Trying to think who else that would, when I was out there playing. You know, I that would be two-handers. Those are the two that kind of come into mind who really focused on, to me, having a really strong wing on
that.
Did you
ever get a chance play Woodruff? Did you ever play Woodruff? He had a pretty good two-hander. Before your time.
I did. I played him once actually on the Challenger circuit, and he did have a solid backhand. That experience doesn't necessarily stick out with me as far as it being a huge a huge threat on that side. And I don't know. Again, I sort of take this back to Jerry. Jerry convinced me I had one of the best backhands. So whether or not it was true or not, I always felt that that was a shot I could dictate with and that I could play with. And, you know, it really wasn't until I couldn't lie to myself anymore, and Agassi just kind of just made me feel like a fool. And Spadia, you know, I still felt like I could match him backhand for backhand, but, you know, he just was unbelievably deceptive with it. I thought he was, even as a player, he didn't necessarily overwhelm you in his appearance, but, you know, had an amazing way to know how to win matches.
Yeah, I can almost picture, Jerry, after you come off the court, you played Andre, you felt what you felt with his two-hander, and I can hear Jerry saying, hey, you know, your backhand's actually better than his. You maybe had an off day or something, and trying to convince you still had a better backhand than anyone else.
Jerry understood mental toughness better than anyone, and he knows how insecure you can become as a player, especially if you lose one or two matches in a row. Confidence is unbelievably shaky, and he was unbelievable at convincing me I was incredible, because certainly as a 5'11", you know, 170-pound player who, you know, in many ways I was just a retriever through most of my junior career and, you know, scrappy during my college career, there wasn't much reason to believe that I had any shot-making ability to succeed at a pro level. And I, looking back, I probably needed that. I think I always knew Jerry was you know, just trying to make me feel better. But, you know, the reality is players are under a tremendous amount of pressure, and he did a great job of convincing me that I was probably better than I actually was. And so, again,
amazing.
I sort of take that back to the importance of mental toughness and working with a, you know, even a sports psychologist for some people worked very well for me. I worked with the same psychologist that Andy Murray started using this summer prior to winning the Open. And I think that's incredibly valuable.
No, it is, and I remember I was 20, probably close to 28 years old. I was living in L.A., and this coach out in Atlanta, he had two guys in the top 100 the first year on tour. It was you and Robbie Ginepri. I said, boy, I got to figure out what's the secret sauce, what this guy's doing. So he certainly has done some special things, not only for you guys, but with his program down in Atlanta. I hope I get to talk to him soon. I got one more question for you, and then I'll let you go. You were talking about how low you hold the racket, and it made me think, I'm going to go back on technique here a little bit, maybe think about one of your friends who you spent a lot of time with on and off the court, Andy Roddick, and I couldn't help but think that he's pretty choked up on that racket, pretty stiff, doesn't probably get a lot of power for a guy who is top five in the world. If you were coaching Andy Roddick, would you say, hey, listen, buddy, do what I do and lower your hands and let's spend 6 months and I think I could help you develop that shot into a weapon. Did that ever cross your mind when you were hanging out with him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was certainly more successful than I was. So it's always hard to think that, hey, I can, as a lower-ranked player, offer you advice. And again, you know, he's got coaches behind him telling him he's the greatest player in the world. So you always have to be sensitive on who's going to actually take your feedback. If I was given the coaching reins, you know, towards his career, you know, there's a couple of problems with that backhand. Number one, his grip was choked up way too high, so he couldn't get any power on it, and that's why, you know, inevitably the balls just sort of sat up. Number two, his right hand was always extended very straight, and if you look at some of the best backhands, you know, there's a little bit of flexibility there, and nobody's arm is ever fully extended like that. So that kind of worked against him, and I think if you looked at his contact point, It was never really fully out in front. He was always way behind the baseline and catching it probably about a foot late. Seems like a small incremental difference, but look at somebody like a Roger Federer who, you know, the beauty of his shot selection and his shots is he doesn't look like he's swinging that hard, but he catches it so far out in front that he optimizes his power. And I felt like Andy always worked very hard on his backhand, and yet it just never went anywhere. And I don't think he really understood the mechanics to really generate pace and actually develop a weapon out of his backhand. He just relied way too much on the serve and forehand, and, you know, which worked early on in his career, but, you know, unfortunately didn't last.
No, you bring such an interesting point up because, like you said, how do you get in the inner circle? How do you make that suggestion? But certainly if given the chance and he called you tomorrow and said, I want to make a comeback, and you might say, hey, listen, if you're going to make a comeback, don't even bother unless you let me take care of your backhand for the next 6 months. Hey, Brian, it was awesome to reconnect with you. Very insightful, amazing information. Thanks so much for your time. I know you're doing some great things outside the tennis world, in the financial world out in Washington, D.C. Congratulations on your success with tennis and with what you're doing now. And really appreciate your time today.
Absolutely.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Bye. Bye-bye.